Hi again, and welcome to Amarin's Podcast, episode 124. We're in the final week of the American election campaign, finally. And joining me...
Thank God.
That was my co-host, Jason.
Hello. Hi.
Now, of course, we are recording this on what is Wednesday, the 29th of October in New Zealand, but it's still Tuesday, the 28th in the U.S. And that means that it is definitely the final week of this long campaign, torturous campaign. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Oh, that's that pesky next door neighbor. just go away, Molly. Oh, no, that was me, wasn't it? Sorry.
Well, so the election campaign is enough to make anybody go a bit schizo, I think. This is just...
I know.
This is, I have to say, before we get into today's topic, I have to say that this has been the most intense election campaign of my lifetime. I've never experienced anything like this one. I mean, in 2004, I was really pulling for John Kerry to defeat Little Bush. But it was nothing like this. It was, I don't know.
We're going to borrow something that my mother called him, which I think was so appropriate, Baby Boy Bush.
Yeah. That's for sure.
When Clinton the first time, I sort of got disgusted, and yeah, I sort of tuned back in. And last 4 years ago, I thought Kerry was a horrible candidate and going to lose, and now I sort of understand why I tuned out, because I'm probably going to have to go in and have, you know, be treated for an ulcer.
Maybe it was a good thing you tuned out. Well, we have changed around our schedule. Originally, I was going to do just two podcasts this week on Tuesday and Friday, but then we were able to add today's podcast, and seemed a bit silly to record on Tuesday as well, so obviously I didn't. Tuesday, New Zealand time, yesterday. But we are obviously recording today. We're going to record another show at the end of the week, and then also one on Election Eve. So it's...
Election Eve. Oh, very exciting
stuff to look forward to.
Yes. And in the United States, Halloween is coming up, so we're hoping for a really big treat and not a trick.
Yes, well, actually, we're going to talk a bit about the congressional elections today, too, because we've given that a bit of short shrift so far, I suppose understandably, because the presidential campaign is dominating the news so much. But we are finally... obviously, in the final week of the presidential campaign, and the intensity is certainly not let up.
No.
Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about, because this has been annoying the hell out of me, I'm putting that mildly, is Fox News. Now, it's the network that I think all rational people would love to hate if they thought about it anyway. Personally, I don't think they should have the word news in their title, because it's nothing but opinion. But they live in an alternate universe to the most normal people, because they are quite frankly a 24-hour John McCain and Republican propaganda machine, because all they ever talk about is how wonderful John McCain is and Sarah Palin is, and how awful Barack Obama and the Democrats are. I don't think I've ever heard them say a kind word about a Democrat, except for Joe Lieberman, who is basically a Republican.
Traitor Joe. Yes. I'm sorry.
Well, when we talk about Congress, we can talk about him, certainly. But one of the things that I think is fascinating is the spin that Fox is putting on almost everything. Them and Elizabeth Hasselbeck of ABC and some of these other right-wingers are constantly repeating the same things over and over and over and over, and saying that Barack isn't addressing them, when he has already addressed them in many cases months ago. And they keep bringing it up and denying that he's talked about it, as if it suddenly will become true if they repeat it often enough. And, of course, we've talked about that before, about how if you repeat a lie often enough, people will believe it and all that sort of thing. But I think one of the most fascinating things recently has been the Fox electoral map, their reading of how the Electoral College is shaping up at the moment. What states were they crazy about?
Okay. Well, this is how they have it set up. Obama has 183, according to their account. McCain has 189. There are 166 electoral votes up for grabs. What is fascinating to me is the states that are up for grabs are,
according to Fox,
are Michigan, where John McCain pulled out at the beginning of October, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Pennsylvania, all of which on anybody else's map are for Obama.
Hmm.
And what is I find particularly interesting is that when you click to change the totals in the states, it goes to McCain's color first. Of course, I suppose they had to pick something first. So, but if you put in these states that everyone else thinks that Barack Obama should have, and I'm going to exclude Virginia at this time. We have sort of a radical change of things where it's 248 for Obama, 189 for McCain. And if you include New Mexico and Virginia, and suddenly, oops, wrong color, sorry. Suddenly, he's up to 266, and he needs 4 electoral votes to win. So I think that's pretty a more realistic. In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to click the little red button, and the Fox site is just going to go away. I think that shows how ridiculous it is. I think they have New Hampshire as sort of a toss-up, which has sort of been trending. It's been bouncing around a bit. Some people have it sort of heavily leaning towards Obama. Other people have it sort of safe, and then other people have it leaning. You know, CNN has safe for Obama 192, safe for McCain 122, and then leaning towards Obama, which they include Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa and Virginia, a little bit more realistic.
Well, there is a
polling and tracking, and then there's the Zogby Electoral College map has Obama at 286.
Well, there is a way.
I'm not sure our 78. So I'm sorry.
There's a way of looking at this, which is, I suppose it's the tinfoil hat brigade, but these days you can never rule anything out, I suppose. Fox News keeps going on and on and on about how McCain can still win. And I talk about the broadcast channel doing that mm-hmm. constantly and all their talking heads. And, of course, this poll shows McCain leading, according to their figures, which basically underscores what their hosts keep saying. Karl Rove has been saying the same thing and talking about how the race is much, much tighter and how McCain can still pull it out and win. And, of course, both McCain and Palin have been on the campaign trail talking about proving the pundits wrong, which under normal circumstances would be the sort of thing that a loser says. When they know that they've lost, they start attacking the pundits and the polls because, you know, they've got nothing left. However, there is a possibility, and this is where the tinfoil hat comes in, that they may be setting up Americans for an excuse if they manage to steal the election. They can say, well, see, we were right. It was much closer than the polls were showing, and the pundits were wrong. We were right all along, so that they think that no one will pay attention. But here's my counterargument to that. I think that because the polls have been so consistently showing an Obama lead of fairly wide margins, and especially in the electoral vote, that if they manage to somehow pull off stealing the election again, that the mainstream media won't just go, oh, well, I guess we were wrong, because their entire prestige is going to be on the line. If they have a poll showing a 14-point lead for Obama and he ends up losing by 3 points, they're going to be saying, now, hang on a minute, this stinks, and they're going to start investigating. So I think that if they do manage to steal the election, and that's what they're trying to set up, that they may end up regretting it more than they think, because the mainstream media is going to be looking into it. And I don't count, by the way, Fox News as mainstream, because they're just too out there.
No. I think it's going to be, well, much harder for them to do that this time.
Yeah.
I mean, early voting has gone heavily in favor of, Democrats.
Yep.
And I think it's hard for, if we go by real clear politics, electoral college map, and they've been pretty close to, been fairly consistent in what they're talking about. They have solid for Obama, 255, which is down a little bit from last time, and leaning 51 for 306.
Yeah.
And solid for McCain, Palin 127, which is down 10, and leaning as 30. And again, which I did a post on about this on my blog, Jason's View from DC.blogspot.com.
Well done. Well done.
Is you need to look at where they're going.
The candidates.
You know, right. And yeah, because, you know, you mentioned Pennsylvania. Well, I think everybody was there today. But yesterday, Palin made three stops. She essentially spent the day in Virginia. McCain yesterday, it's today, was in Pennsylvania and in North Carolina. Why would a Republican candidate need to be in Virginia and North Carolina? And from what I understand, Sarah Palin is coming back into Virginia as well. Why would you need to be there?
Yeah.
You know, these are hardcore, solid states that usually vote Republican. You know, Virginia hasn't voted for a Republican since Lyndon Johnson.
You mean a Democrat?
It's like they were, wishful thinking. Sorry. And, you know, Colorado, you know, where they were there on Saturday or Sunday, I think Sunday, everybody was in Colorado. Well, Colorado hasn't voted for a Democrat since Bill Clinton. And the only reason that happened was because Ross Perot was on the ballot.
Yeah.
You know, Obama came back from Hawaii and was in Nevada. You know, there's concerns about on the Republican side about Montana.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me nervous because I really want him to win, because I think electing President Palin, because I'm sorry, I think that's what you do if you
Absolutely.
Elect John McCain.
She Absolutely.
Becomes president at some point. That the rhetoric doesn't match where they are. I mean, if your goal is Pennsylvania and they're going into Florida, which is a battleground state, which is, you know, mainly gone towards Republicans lately.
Mm.
But if you're fighting in states that you already should have, and supposedly they're going to be doing some work in West Virginia. Biden was in West Virginia on Saturday. Everywhere the Republicans are going, are except for Pennsylvania, are states that they should have already or are toss-up states. You know, it's the toss-ups are like Florida, Missouri, Nevada, you know, sort of things like that. Although in the Real Clear Politics Electoral College map, they have North Dakota and Montana in that list, and Indiana as well. And that just, you know, it's again, if you're looking at where they're going into places that they shouldn't have to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're also seeing some signs of desperation, including the increasingly shrill attacks on Fox and from Palin and McCain and their supporters and so on. But we're also seeing the emergence of some dirty tricks. In, where was it? Hampton Roads area of Virginia. The Republicans were starting to circulate flyers that were that had official looking state seals, and it said it was from the Virginia State Board of Elections, telling that through an emergency action of the state the state assembly, whatever it's called, the Republicans would vote on November 4th, but Democrats should vote on November 5th. And of course, it was completely fake, and the state election officials have turned it over to police for investigation because it amounts to voter intimidation, which is of course a crime. But
right.
The thing is, if that's happening in that part of Virginia, it's probably happening all over the country, that kind of thing. And they've done it before, obviously. And this is basically why the conspiracy theories start taking root, because the Republicans have done this sort of thing in the past. They've also done things that are a bit stronger to intimidate voters or to suppress voter turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets people concerned, I think. But The one of the things that I'm concerned about is that when Obama wins, that the right wing has dug themselves or pushed themselves into a corner, we'll say, that they've got nowhere to go but to spend 4 years viciously attacking Obama. And, I mean, look at what they did to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was elected president in 92. The Republican right, I mean the far right, not even just the ordinary right, but the far right, never saw that election as legitimate. And they spent 8 years trying to get Clinton out of office.
And that's what led
to the foundation of MoveOn.org.
Before they were even in office, I remember seeing a bumper sticker in Washington, D.C., no less, Clinton, Gore, out in four. And they hadn't even taken office yet.
Yeah. Well, that kind of thing is common among the right wing. I remember when here in New Zealand, when the Labour Party became government after the 99 elections, somebody wrote a snitty letter to one of the newspapers saying, well, obviously Labour will only be a one-term government. They can't possibly win again. Of course, they've won two governments since then and may actually still take it this year. So, I mean, that's common among the right. They assume that the entire world thinks the way they do and or should, and therefore whatever they think is going to come to pass. And they will spend however long it takes drilling that message home again and again and again and again.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but the far left does the exact same thing.
Not in the same way. I mean, well, I know I've spent 8 years at criticizing George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and John Ashcroft and all the rest of their cabal, but it's not in the same way. Apart from saying that Bush-Cheney stole the 2000 election, which they clearly did, and that they probably stole the 2004 election, or at least there's enough evidence to suggest that they probably did, and the fact that they have committed high crimes and misdemeanors and should have been impeached, despite what the Democratic leadership wanted, I think they should have done it. But putting all those issues aside, and if Palin does become the next president, I mean vice president, obviously I'm going to be spending my entire time criticizing them as well. But it's not the same way as saying the election is illegitimate necessarily. Because I have enough doubts about 2004 about whether or not it was stolen to not declare, yes, it was definitely stolen. I think it probably was. But I don't know that. Mm-hmm. But that's really not the issue for me. How they got there is not the issue. The issue is that they have been the worst. This has been the worst presidency in American history, and most Americans would agree with me on that, probably, mm-hmm. or certainly yes. that this guy's a disaster. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is that no matter who wins, there are going to be problems, and we shouldn't think that November 4th is going to be the end of the story. There's going to be a lot more afterwards, no matter who wins.
Well, yes, I think that's entirely true, and I think it's very unfortunate the way the Republicans and the Democrats, the way McCain's run the campaign, because it's very, very, you know, very, very negative. Oh, he's not only now is he socialist, oh, he's a Marxist, oh, he's going to redistribute wealth, and it's, stepping back, the question you have to ask to John McCain is, okay, how do you say he wins? How do you unite the country? How do you bring aboard supporters of Barack Obama? When I'm sorry, by calling my candidate these things, you're calling me these things as well.
Absolutely. That's exactly what they're saying. I mean, Fox News, for instance, which is, the 24-hour Palin-McCain channel, has constantly referred to Obama's supporters as ultra-leftists, as extremists, and even anti-American. You cannot then turn around and say, oh, well, we're all together and let's all stand behind this President Palin. You just can't do it. Whereas Obama has never gone down that road. He has obviously called McCain's judgment into question, and certainly everyone on the center and left has been criticizing Palin's clearly detached nature, detached from reality.
Arthur.
I cannot stand to hear her speak. But anyway, I don't want to go there. But what I'm getting at basically is that Obama is in a position to, because he has never gone down that road, he is in a position to reach out a hand of reconciliation to the other side. And people who aren't on the extremes could take that up.
Right.
But McCain can't. He cannot reach out the hand of conciliation, because if he's calling me a Marxist, why the hell would I want to make friends with him?
You know, right.
He can't be evil and then turn around and be all nicey nice. It's just, it doesn't work.
The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to be really nice, because he's not going to be in a position. He's going to have to work with Democrats, because the Democrats are going to really control Congress to probably a huge extent.
Yeah. And that's actually been getting a lot of coverage in the press, too, this trend for the Democrats to be making huge inroads in Congress.
And then, of course, what the Republicans posit in turn as well, you know, you don't want one party rule, both houses of Congress. And that also seems to me to be sort of, aren't you admitting that you've lost?
Yeah, Although I have to admit that I thought that argument was really rich coming from Republicans, because, you know, for most of the Bush-Cheney regime, they had a Republican control of both houses of Congress.
So on that, and then of course we've had the just yesterday the conviction of Senator Stevens from Alaska, which certainly does not add to the Republican brand. And Mitch McConnell is actually in trouble in Kentucky, and he is the minority leader. So there is stuff that, you know, they're in trouble sort of across the board. And the again, these are places where you shouldn't have be. There shouldn't be a problem. They should be.
Well, the last
you know,
time
Al Franken might be a senator from Minnesota. Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Well, last time I looked, there was only one Democratic congressperson who was in deep trouble, and that was that guy in Florida who was having all those affairs or whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would particularly want to have that seat, since that's where Mark Foley's. I mean, I suppose. Playing around with little boys, playing around with older women. It's like someone was saying, some Republican was saying, like, why isn't there more coverage of what this guy's been doing? And they calmly said over and over again, because one is about affairs with adults and one is about children.
Or minors, anyway.
Or minors, I guess.
Maybe teenagers.
You know, and that's the total difference. And it wouldn't make any difference if he was going after someone who was under 18 who was male or female, it would be the same type of reaction. These are adults, and they're just screwing around, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, so, it may be inappropriate, but it's not necessarily illegal,
right?
What the Democrat was doing. Yeah.
So, I mean, and there are places where they should be winning. You know, there should be places like the Georgia Senate race. The Republican is up by a couple of points. Well, you know, probably the Democrat's going to win in Virginia, since he's up by 30 points. We mentioned that earlier.
Probably.
Some of the other places are North Carolina with Elizabeth Dole. She's in a very, very tight race.
And deservedly so.
Very possible. Well, yeah, and it's very possible that she will not make it. But again, these are places that the Republicans should not be having this type of a problem, and they are. So your resources are going into, you know, making it possible so you survive in these places, and it should be, you should be ahead in these places.
Yeah,
you know,
the,
I mean, it should just be a simple trip for them to win in Georgia, goodness, you know.
Well, one of the things I'd like to add to this, though, is a bit of a caveat, and that's that, although, I mean, I love seeing the Republicans floundering like this, and I would love to see them absolutely decimated in the congressional elections for both House and Senate. However, nobody should get the idea that it's going to mean a massive ideological shift in the new Congress just because there will be a lot more Democrats. Because a lot of these Democrats who are or may be elected are actually quite conservative. And Kentucky is a good example of that. Just because a Democrat may knock off Mitch McConnell, who's pretty vile, he's not a liberal Democrat by any stretch of the imagination. And that's true in other places as well. I mean, some of these you might call blue dog Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
So there won't be any major ideological shift, and conservatives will still be controlling Congress. It's just that more of them will be Democrats than used to be the case.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the cloture rule, which is to stop filibusters in the Senate, you need 60 votes. And probably if they get that, and with Alaska now in play, it is a possibility. It doesn't mean on every single issue that that's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not, you know, the parties are ideological, but yet at the same time they're not.
What it means is that having more Democrats in Congress will make it more likely that President Obama will be able to act on his agenda. It doesn't make it certain, because the people in Congress, both houses, are really quite independent. Many of them are only nominally part of their parties. They just go off and do their own thing for their own district or their own state or whatever it might be. And you can't count on them to support even really important issues that the party wants them to vote a certain way. You can't guarantee that they will. Well, why don't we go on to comments from the last episode? And, of course, we're going to try to get to all the comments over the next couple of episodes. But I should say to regular listeners that comments on the ordinary episodes I'll get to after the elections are over, because I don't expect to be doing a regular podcast between now and the elections. So
it's all politics all the time. We'll be bouncing off the wall.
Well, why don't we start out with a phone message that I have from Calvin from Hello Waffles.
Hi, Arthur. This is Calvin. I really enjoyed your last political cast. I just say I was very happy to hear, I was happy to hear about the YPN thing, but it was something I didn't know about, and I was glad to be apprised of it. I was a little sad you guys were so denigrating the third-party candidates, and the Green Party candidate is Cynthia McKinney. Anyway, I think, I mean, we do have serious problems regarding the two-party system that does kind of make them not as consequential, but I think many times they bring up issues that do need to be discussed, which are taken out of the main corporate media, whatever, you know, hegemony. Beyond that, I think I'm still very concerned about Colin Powell, actually, and the fact that Obama says he's going to put him probably in an advisor position. I mean, after he so blatantly lied about the Iraq war, I think it's really disconcerting, and along with Biden, who is also a huge war hawk. But anyway, I hope things are going well tomorrow, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Calvin. And of course, you can find Calvin's podcast at hellowaffles.blogspot.com, I think it is. At any rate, there's a link on both my blog and the podcast site.
He mentioned the Green Party candidate.
Yeah, well, first he talked about denigrating third-party candidates, and I think the only ones we were actually denigrating were the wackos, like the Constitution Party and Natural Law and people like that.
Natural Law. Well, he mentioned Cynthia McKinney, and in Monday Style section in the Washington Post is actually a story on the Green Party, Cynthia McKinney.
Well, there you go.
Believe it or not.
Now, I do think that Calvin raised a valid point about third parties, that they bring up issues that need to be discussed, things that the mainstream corporate media generally don't discuss. And I think that that's absolutely true. And I actually think that the Green Party often raises, Green Party in particular, often raises issues like that. But I think we have to be realistic. The system is set up so that only a Republican or a Democrat will win the presidency, and probably in most places in the country, probably 99.9% of districts, only a Republican or a Democrat will be elected. And it's because the entire system is set up that way. The McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform actually entrenches the Republican and Democratic candidates. It doesn't make it easier for third parties or third or independent candidates to be elected to any office, any national office. So
and the hoops that you have to go through
absolutely.
If you are an independent candidate to get your name on the ballot. It's every single state is different at the presidential level, and I'm assuming if it's some sort of a county type office, would county rules? I'm guessing at this.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that varies from state to state. Exactly how that
is
arrived at, and on the local level, probably it is easier for a third party or independent candidate to be elected. At the especially the further down you go, probably the easier it is.
Well, in smaller towns, probably we know growing up in Illinois, there were people who were, you know, independents, whether they were or not. In reality, it's another matter. But they were independents and they got elected. You know.
Yeah.
And well, it does happen.
Although in the case of the Illinois legislature, part of that was because of the way the House used to be structured. There were people who were nominally independent. They were actually with the majority party. But one of the things I wanted to say was about McCain-Feingold makes it almost impossible for a third party to be elected to even to Congress, because there's like 500 pages of regulations in tiny, tiny two-column type that a candidate has to follow. And if they miss a deadline, if they file something that's not completely 100% correct, they could be fined tens of thousands of dollars, and their campaign manager, even if they're a volunteer, can be held personally and legally responsible, financially responsible. And they can be fined several hundred thousand dollars for a tiny little insignificant error. So the McCain-Feingold thing, which John McCain likes to bring up as being this wonderful paragon of the thing, is actually one of the greatest disasters that's struck American politics since probably carpetbag Republicans, Dixiecrats. I mean, you can just add it to the list. It was a terrible thing. I mean, I'm all for campaign finance reform, but let's make it a level playing field so that third-party candidates can get in. Having said all that, I should just reiterate what I've said before. I cannot stand Ralph Nader. I never could stand him, and that's not going to change.
The only at the presidential level, really the only way a third party candidate would have any sort of a chance or to have the sort of whole dynamic change is if every single state went to
yeah.
districts, congressional districts.
Like Maine, was it Maine? Maine does, and some of
the Maine and Nebraska. Maine and Nebraska, I think. But it, and then you'd, and then whoever won the most of the House seats, or the House districts, would then get the two Senate, because it's the number of representatives plus the number of senators that equals your total number of electoral votes. So that's how it would work. And there was actually legislation in California to do this, and Schwarzenegger vetoed it, thank God, because it would really sort of skew things. It would have to be, everybody would have to do it.
Yeah, every state.
You know, especially when with Maine and Nebraska have like 4 and 3 electoral votes, Maine has 4 and Nebraska has 5. I was close. So it's not a huge thing, but with divvying up California, which is 55.
And New York and Ohio and Illinois and Florida and all the other states.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it could have a flow-on effect, because by making all states award their electoral votes proportionately, it would also mean that technically all of the electoral votes would be in play. And no candidate could take any state for granted then. Because, I mean, even in the reddest states, there are blue districts, and in the bluest states, there are red districts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question about that.
So
downstate Illinois, big cities in Texas.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's absolutely possible that this could actually help democratizing things, as well as giving third-party and independent candidates an actual shot. But one last thing about what Calvin brought up, he was talking about Colin Powell. And one of the things I'd like to say is I give him the benefit of the doubt, because we know from what's come out in the years since then that Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice conspired to keep Colin Powell out of the loop about what was going on. And they cooked up all the lies that they told to the media and to the American people and to the world even. And so it's entirely possible that they bald-faced lied to Colin Powell and got him to do their dirty work, knowing that it was all lies, but that he wasn't any the wiser. Now, having said that, I do wish that if that is the case, that he would come out and say it rather than just keep silent. I think that he should spill the beans on this corrupt administration, and he should say, look, they lied to me about this, and he hasn't done that. And so that leaves that little bit of a doubt. He is, as for being a warmonger, that's true to the extent that he's a military man. I mean, you'd sort of expect that. I'm not a huge fan of his in the sense that I don't think, oh my God, I wish he'd run for president or anything like that. I'm not one of his greatest defenders, but I'm a little reluctant to attack him too hard, because we don't know the extent to which he was lied to like the rest of us were, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's totally correct.
Well, let's go on to the written comments now. And of course, these can be found at aaronspodcast.com. And of course, a reminder that you do need to be approved if you're a first-time commenter, but I always do approve those. I've gotten the spam comment issue sorted, apparently.
But good.
Yeah, thankfully. And that actually was the suggestion that came from Mark from Slap Upside the Head. So big shout out to Mark. anyway.
Hello. Yay, Mark.
The first comment was from Faith, who said, "Hi, Arthur, this is Rhonda in Orlando. Yes, early voting has started here, and yes, the lines are very long. I'm voting Libertarian because I'm sick of both of the leading parties this year. I usually do," with a grinny face. "We also have the Definition of Marriage, Amendment 2, on our ballot in Florida this year. I wish there was a comment space somewhere on the ballot so I could give voice to precisely how I feel about the idiots who proposed this. I do not expect it to pass. I hope it doesn't pass. If it does, that would leave, as far as I know, I think it's only, she says, the only municipality in Florida that does respect domestic gay partnerships and has specific laws regarding same-sex unions. I presume she means it would be affected. Love you, sweetheart." Smiley face. "When do we all get to see your smiling face again?" With, oddly enough, a smiley face. And first to answer that first, I don't know. She's talking about my videos, and I'm hoping to do one soon. I've been trying to do one about the New Zealand elections, but quite frankly, the weather hasn't been cooperating, or I've been too busy, or both. So we'll see. I still hope to do that, but the elections are on Saturday, the 8th of November, our time, so I don't have a whole lot of time left, but we'll see. But to the larger points about Amendment 2, is if I remember correctly, I think it needs 60% approval to be approved. And the polls have been back and forth. The latest polls that I saw were showing that it was tending not to get the 60%. The major newspapers are all opposed to it because, among other things, not only would it outlaw same-sex marriage, which, by the way, is already illegal under Florida law, it would basically forbid any recognition of same-sex relationships, whether it's a civil union, some sort of partnership registry, or even company benefits, potentially.
Right.
I mean, Michigan ran into the same issue when they outlawed any recognition of same-sex relationships. So hopefully it will fail, and hopefully, of course, Prop 8 in California will fail. The haters are going into overdrive in California. I'll tell you, they've got a Chinese language commercial that talks about incest and bestiality and all kinds of other things. And they have some homophobic Mexican, actually, soap star who has come out, he's done a Spanish language commercial against it. He's apparently rabidly Catholic, which is where it comes from. He's anti-gay, anti-abortion, all that stuff as well. Rather cute, though. And but the cast of Ugly Betty has done a Spanish language commercial opposed to Proposition 8. So it's all over the place. But the haters have used a lot of lies in California, and I imagine they probably are in Florida as well, although I frankly know less about that than I do about California's. But anyway, well, thanks for the comment, Faith. I actually think Faith has left a review on iTunes as well.
Oh, my.
And the other comment was from Roger Green, who left a link, and he says, I love irony. This is a quote. Governor Palin went shopping at Out of the Closet, an Anchorage-based secondhand store. And his link. I thought that was ironic too, Roger. I thought, okay.
Something to do.
Yes. And we also had an email from Lord Byron, who said, good show. I love your banter with Jason. Banter? Do we banter?
I don't know. Do we? I will have to look that up, won't we?
He says, now, for our governor, he's talking of Illinois, we pronounce it Blagojevich. I think it's
Chicago.
He says, I think it's Chicago Polish. Do you have to get that?
No, let it go.
Okay. It's probably Homer. Archer can explain it.
Okay.
Some of us have other pronunciations for him, but I won't go there. Yes, I'm sure that's true. He's like got a 13% approval rating from the last poll I saw.
Oh, goodness.
He was the one I was saying last time that I didn't know how to pronounce his name because it's spelled Blagojevich, and although I knew that wasn't it. So it apparently is Blagojevich. Who knew?
Good and tight. Anyway.
And he goes on to say, the voter bus was in town again today, and as I drove past, I saw about 25 people standing in line to vote. With only 1,600 people in town, we're getting to run out of the 25s pretty soon. Insert laughter here. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, who is a Democratic senator from Iowa, has an ad on TV that makes me laugh. There are a group of elementary-age children doing a simulation of Congress in session. The soundtrack says, this is quoting, if kids could vote, they'd vote for health care. So did Tom Harkin. Then the kids do a major yay on the victory of their vote. The commercial should have stopped there, but it didn't. It went on for a kid to say, I move that we have more recesses. Another yay. To me, that part of the simulation was probably more accurate.
Yes, well, indeed.
Well, thank you for that, Your Lordship.
Yes. And a tip of the hat.
Yes. And we've actually been trading emails back and forth about things going on in Illinois. And it's been a fascinating discussion talking about a call for a constitutional convention, which happens in Illinois every 20 years. But it's really an intensely local issue. So I don't think we need to go into that, at least not right now.
No. Mm-mm.
But those are the comments, the emails. And, of course, anyone is welcome to leave a comment at amrinspodcast.com, where the show notes and various links are also located. And we also have a listener line, which you can emulate Calvin and ring on 206-339-8413. And, of course, all of these contact details are repeated at the end of the episode. And if you do your little get info thing on this file, you'll also find those contact details in there, I hope. I've never actually checked, so I don't know.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. We'll let you go on that one.
Yeah. I'll report back next time.
Okay. That sounds good. That's your assignment.
Yes. Well, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
They can find me at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com. All sorts of fascinating things about living in Washington, D.C. and the environs beyond and stuff like that. So,
very good. And, of course, we will be back on Thursday/Friday, depending on which hemisphere you're in. And again,
yes, that's very true.
We'll be back again also on Election Eve.
Election Eve.
Well, until then, that's goodbye from New Zealand.
And that's goodbye from Washington, D.C. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinds Podcast at amerindspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at arthur@amerindspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.